and it went like.
Hi, everybody. This is Patty Toledo. I'm here with Buas Games Grindset. And today my guest is Carlos Santos. And Carlos must be sick and tired of this joke, but I will do it again. It's the first time ever that I can say someone's surname without butchering. Carlos, if you had listened to the podcast before, you noticed that I cannot say Dutch names ever. Welcome, Carlos. It's great to have you here.
Thank you very much, Patty, for inviting me. Don't worry, I've been here for 15 years. I keep butchering Dutch names anyway.
So at least I'm not alone in this. This is great. Carlos, introduce yourself, please. Tell a little bit. I know that you have a really, really long career and you have been working in a ton of stuff, but please share a little bit with our audience.
Sure. My name is Carlos. I'm Portuguese. I did my education in Portugal, and I soon after joined a software house where I worked in really large projects linked to NATO and European Space Agency and some airplane aeronautics work, etc. But my passion always been games, so I've been developing on the sides some cereal box games, literally games that came on cereal boxes. This is the 90s, and those small DVDs that sometimes come as a promotion. Nice. On magazines or something like that. That's just basically, I did some of those small things. Then the mobile era came. I built a couple of small mobile games, and I started working for Buas, Brave University Applied Sciences, a lecturer. Soon after, I started my PhD, graduated. I started doing a bit more research, and now I'm working as a professor in applied data science and AI, but always linked with games and game technology. I've been working in VR, AR, digital twins, film industry, anything that has a game technology or game engine, I'm probably did it or worked with it somehow.
And that's exactly why I invited Carlos to be here. Carlos and I work closely together and we have a lot of common interests as well. And I think nobody can deny that AI is a super hot topic for the good and for the bad. We hear all sides of the discussion. And I think as for this podcast, I thought it was super important for us to start the discussion and see like the different positions on how AI in games work. So first thing that for me is always very funny is the fear around AI. You have in the games industry, you have the early the people that have been embracing AI since early stages, but also you have the people that are like, AI is the devil in disguise. We can't do anything with it. It's horrible. It's gonna destroy jobs, and we know the whole approach. Carlos, as a professor in AI, you are working really deeply with the technology. Why do you think that people have, like, especially in games where people are technological by nature, they have been working with technology all this time, why this extreme fear of AI all of a sudden?
Because I think it's because of the nature of the current AI technologies that have caught most of us over surprise. Most of the people that were working in AI, me included, were always saying that, well, AI might replace menial jobs and small jobs, but we'll never be able to do any creative work and be able to create any conceptual work. And we were terribly wrong. At the moment, AI can have very interesting outputs based on pure text, and that is scaring a lot of people because it was unexpected. But I agree that there is a change in the AI perspective, but I don't think we should be fearing AI. For the contrary, I think there is so much stuff that still needs to be happening before AI can take over any type of creative jobs that will be non-consequential. Well, for the contrary, I think AI is here and will be there for helping a lot of development, can improve and make our lives easier and more efficient, but it will not be able to replace humans, not for the next 15 years, probably.
And I usually I like comparing AI with robotics, right? Because when we started having machinery, for example, in factories, it's not the same comparison to creative, but bear with me here that when we started having robots in factories, the discussion was also, oh my God, everybody will lose their jobs, nobody will do. And the truth is, if you are a button pusher, if all you do is, yeah, then sorry, you might lose your job for a robot. But if you are what we are as human beings, creative, intelligent beings that are capable of doing more than just pushing a button, then it's not as black and white as people think, right?
No, definitely. So one of the things that AI has been involved in games since 1970s, the first games like Pong, it has AI in it, and it's just a ping pong game that just moves the ball left and right. And AI has been involved in games to replace opponents that are fictitious or try to give a bit more environment in the game so players can feel more engaged with the game and more opponents and more a bit of a challenge. The AI is not new in this field, so for me it was actually a surprise that the industry was so fearful of AI because this is something that should be more or less accepted as an industry that already uses AI for more than 30 years. The nature of AI is more about the efficiency it brings, and this is what I think people are fearing, is that, well, if one person with AI can do the same job as four of persons without AI, then the other four will be fired. I think this is exactly the opposite of what we should look at. We should look at if four people are empowered by AI, then you're going to do 8 times more work or 16 times more work. And we can do much more creative work with it. So it's not about the quantity, is going to be more about the quality and then the work that you can actually do with it. And we see that perhaps the bigger companies will be a bit affected with it, but that's also we start seeing that now in with the creative industry. There's a lot of indie companies starting up, a lot of games, smaller games that are shaping up, and I really like that aspect because it's becoming a bit more democratic in the sense that more people are able to showcase their skill sets independently of big rebranding IPs. Since this is the way I'm seeing in the future, so I'm going to see more of the smaller productions coming. But yeah, I think there will be some effects in the let's say it, in the job market. But in the long run, this will be a drop in the bucket. I don't think it will be a big change in industry. I think we'll become more creative, more impactful, and even more be able to create interesting games, different games.
Yeah, I think technology impacted jobs to begin with. It's like I find it for me, what is curious why all this fear, just to end this part as well, is why are we afraid of that and we were not afraid of computers, of internet? It's like because all that, the same work that used to be extremely difficult to do, now we can do a lot faster, right? And it's part of the evolution. I think is there is that saying that people are afraid of what they don't understand. What I think there is a lot of ignorance. And I don't say that in a pejorative or diminishing way of anybody else. It's just that the technology developed so extremely fast, people didn't have time to catch up to what does it mean and how they can use it effectively.
I agree, and not only that, there's been the games industry is very recent. It's a small industry and a young industry compared to others.
Yeah,
And
it's
in
small, we
this,
can't say.
Small, no, but I mean, it's like it's young in the sense they only has like 30 years, and it's the last 30 years it suffered so many different changes. The distribution models changed. They changed from 2D to 3D. They changed from pixel art to more sophisticated 3D graphics, more realistic graphics. So there is so many different changes that they've been suffering. In this is my personal belief is this is just another change, and we'll accommodate and we'll improve and we'll evolve and we'll do it better next time. There will be changes. There will be shakes in the market, but again, it's just another one of the other 40 that we have in the industry.
But then, like, I like that. That's a good point. Say the changes in the show. So, what should we expect? How, because AI has been in games for such a long time. Like, we had David Mulick as a guest here, and he was saying that his first game, I think, was in 74 that he developed, and it was using AI. So we know that it has been for since the beginning. So if AI in the game development is so well used, where is gonna change the most, right? I know that you have a really good structure on where AI will be the most useful, so it would be great to share that.
So if you consider like AI, used AI in games, there is basically three big elements that you can use AI for. Or you have the NPCs, being opponent or not, so non-player characters that you can support development or having AI to represent non-player characters that you play with or against. You have the environmental AI, things like the weather and the tides and the currents and the wave systems and other things like that's called more like the environmental based AI that creates the environment for the player to play with. And then you have all of the AI linked to that typically people almost don't consider AI, which is the graphics engine, so the SSL, so for having graphics, more faster graphics, to have more accurate animation systems. It's more like the design, the game development side that players don't normally see. So for the player itself, you have the non-player characters, environmental AI, and that's, to be fair, it's been covered for the last 5, 6 years. That's no more evolution required because it's covered. Most of the things that humans can create for AI, they can beat any best players out there. They've been having tournaments, beating the best players in the world, with AI for the last 5, 10 years. So that is covered. What I think the big advances are coming is the support systems that we can create to make the games more realistic, to create to support game developers to create better games. And that is something that I feel very passionate about, because there is enough out there, from ray tracing to neural texture representation to character movement and locomotion, generative having generative content be created, all of those things, that there is enough out there for to cover really creative work that can create different scopes for game developers to play around.
And you were talking about NPCs. We are going to talk about the tools as well, but we are talking about NPCs. And I agree with you that we developed quite a lot on that. I think the part on the NPCs that I or in the environment as well, that I still think it's interesting that AI could use, is that with everybody using AI now, especially tools like ChatGPT, I think that the communication flow and the vocabulary and the way AI is reacting is improving a lot. So I think a lot of the evolution that we will see in NPCs and environments is more becoming closer to what a human interaction would be than it used to be. Because of course, we still, for a long time, we still saw glitches and turns. But I think that side, but this is almost like a normal evolution. We don't need to do anything. Using the tools that we're using will do that. But for an indie, for example, a student or an indie developer that is listening to the podcast and they say, okay, I'm not afraid anymore. I want to see how can I embrace AI? How can I learn better from that? Where would be like a good way to know, like what kind of tools should they be focusing on using the tools that are already there? Should they be creating the new tools with like, how should they go by? Like, what are the options that they have?
I think the first step is to learn what is possible and what not possible at the moment. And don't be wrong, I'm working in AI for a very long time and trying to follow the trends. And even for me, it's difficult to know what's going
it's
on.
It's a lot, isn't it?
It's the pace of evolution is astonishing. What I can say is that if you want to start embedding AI into your processes, start using the existing out there tools and see like ChatGPT or Claude. Both are amazing tools to start with and playing around. And even if nothing else, just use it as a sparring partner, a creative partner, someone else that is there is like, what about this? Can you change this? What would you advise for doing this? And that's already a starting point because it gives you a design sparring partner that can be very, very creative or at least has a good knowledge around things. You have to practice a bit more prompting, but that is something that will come with time and will come with your own trying and error, what works for you. It's sometimes it's a very personal element. Then it depends a bit on your game scope, right? Like if you're using a 3D character, the current character movement and locomotions are really, really great. If you want to play with realistic setting, ray tracing is a good starting point. Now, they depends a bit on what you want to focus on and what would you be your, this is a very reused set of keywords, which is unique selling points. Like, what do you want to make it different? And I think, for example, you have to be, I think the mentality shift that needs to be happening in the future is that games create an experience. They're experienced designers. Game designers create an experience for a player. They try to map out how the player will feel from point A when they start the game until point B, which is when they finish the game. And they try to modulate all of the type of conversation, all of the paths possible, etc. As soon as you start introducing like generative tools, that experience becomes difficult for the game designers to control. So it is a bit of the option for the game developers, game designers to think about, should I let control go and make in risk not be able to control that experience of the player completely, or can I bound it somehow? And there is some experience on that. Like Diablo has the generation of the maps that were created dynamically. There was a few other elements there that try to somehow still control the player experience in a way that allows infinite bound solutions. So there is experiences there, but now the struggle that I see between game developers and AI is that on one side, the game developers want to control the experience and make sure that the experience of the player is always good or at the level they want. And if you use any type of generative tools, you have to lose a bit of that control. So that is going to be the major struggle from the game developer side on how to bound the generative capabilities to make sure that you still give that amazing experience to the player.
And also there are the purists that will say, oh, if you're using AI, you're not a game developer anymore. You're not doing that. The technology is doing. But one thing that you were commenting about using, for example, ChatGPT and Claude to support, I think one of the biggest mistakes I have seen people that are starting with AI making is that they try one, two times, and then they go, "Yeah, no, this is bollocks. It doesn't work. Look at the answer. It's horrible." And then they go away. Is that they don't understand that it's like training a puppy, a very smart puppy, bear with me, but it's still training a puppy. Is the more you use, the more you refine the prompts, the more you have that conversation with the AI, the more it will adapt to what you want and what is the idea that you want to create. I think a lot of people misunderstand AI as a yes, immediate answer, and everything is ready, and it's not there, right? Like, yeah, and I don't think it will ever be there. It's like a baby that you are, not a baby anymore because it can talk, but it's a toddler that we are teaching what is supposed to be for us, right?
It's actually a two-way street, right? Like when you start using AI, you get sometimes really dumb answers. Sometimes, and especially if you're using it for a while in the beginning, they had a lot of hallucinations. It's like, this is not really the thing. But it's also about how and way you shape your own prompts. So it's both ways. They have to learn with your context. They have to learn what type of answers do you like to receive. They try to modify their own behavior according to the different answers you have. But this is also the other way around. You also have to learn how to make the questions. This is still a computer. The computers, I've been working in programming for 30 years, and it's very simple. If you type wrong commands, if you type the wrong instructions, the code will not work. This is exactly the same thing, but they just created a bit of the ability to make your language a bit more accessible. But it's the same thing. If you input garbage, you're going to get garbage out. And this is the same thing. So it's going to be a similar situation here where you have to correctly create the right instructions for the computer to follow with the correct answer. And so it's a very dynamic and it's an interesting setup, because if you consider, or if you think about as a programmer, more like even a game designer, you have to provide the correct experience to the AI, so the AI can give you that correct feedback. So that this is basically the correct or the best way I can describe it.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because I can say by personal experience, since I started using AI more closely, I realized that it's forcing me to think things that in my head are very clear, and then I would use it as a prompt, and then I see that the response is completely off. And at first, it's very easy to go and say, no, it's not that. But the truth is, maybe it was clear in your head, but when you translated it into language, it wasn't clear at all. It has double sense and all of that, right? So, but I wanted to say, the developers started using AI, they lose the fear. I think there are a few things that have been in discussion that are pertinent and we need to discuss, which are copyright and safety but I'm putting my baby there for the AI to check. Will that be used and be used by other people afterwards? Do I lose my ownership of the idea? And you know, game developers have been afraid of losing their ideas since the beginning of time. So let's talk about the elephant in the room, or elephants, or the whole zoo. So
sure.
So start with copyright. Let's start with that point.
That is a difficult one. First, I have the political correctly answer, and I have the more radical one.
So let's start with
Let's
the
start.
politically correct, and then we go to the radical. I always like to turn to the dark side afterwards.
Political correct answer is that IPs and intellectual property should be correctly assigned, and the AI models should train only on shared work with the correct rights, and authorship should be assigned, etc. And I think there's been a lot being going on in the AI world, in that world, and in that scope, to actually provide the correct way to showcase the work, but not at the same time impact or try to steal any creative process that was already there.
Very
Now,
political, yeah, very politically correct. Like, yes.
said that, I don't know a lot of really unique and innovative ideas. Since the beginning of time, the conceptualization, the design side, the intellectual property of something, it's been a refactor of what was done before with something added. There is very few moments in history where, for example, perspective is being a really good one. So if you look at the Renaissance, and the work that was done in the Renaissance era, so in the 1500s, the major difference is they came up with a different way to represent painting, which was the perspective view. They had this idea of viewpoints, and the perspective became different. That's why the paintings before Renaissance and after Renaissance are so different, because they figure out a good way, a mathematic way, to represent perspective in 2D. And from that came out a huge set of work that came out from Renaissance work from Italy and Genova, and then it spread around Europe, coming from out from there. Then you have the abstraction work, and there's this movements that came in and out, but they generated like a movement of different types of IPs. So it's difficult for me to say, yeah, this is an intellectual property, should maintain. This is a character that was created, which was never seen character before, which typically is just a mishmash of other ideas, other representations, other things. It's difficult for me to just say that is a possible intellectual property that is always there. And because if I look back, it's the mishmash. But this is a personal view, right? I'm not saying that I'm not an AI developer of diffuse models that generate elements and images, but this is a personal view that I have, that intellectual property is not that specified as before. And if you actually look at IP law, it clearly says that as long as you can take inspiration of other work and even take a painting or a photograph done by someone else and then significantly alter it in such a way that to put your own coinage on it, it becomes your own IP and not the previous person. This is what the definition of IP is.
It's true.
And
But
so this is basically what AI is doing as well. So it's going to be a difficult one to discuss. And I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a person that is bound by laws or study law. So it's a bit of outside of my realm, but I'm following it up with that discussion with quite attentive eyes.
I have been following up with different lawyers as well. I have a friend who is deeply interested. She's a lawyer and deeply interested in that, so it's always interesting. But that it very recently there was a huge discussion because AI started a thing that you could go to ChatGPT and ask to have your image as Studio Ghibli, and they would
Yeah.
create the image, and people were horrified, like, oh, the copyright. I tend not to comment on these things and not steer the pandemonium because it doesn't make any difference. People have their own opinions, and a lot of time they are very stuck in it. But I will, and here, unpopular opinion I'm putting out in the air is what makes Studio Ghibli unique is not the art style, is the story, is the way they are telling stories, are their camera angles, is the whole environment, is the music, is everything. Any artist can go and do an image as Studio Ghibli, and it's not going to make them a robber nor a super artist. So I find it interesting how people, I think like it, I, the two topics we discussed today, they are connected, is the fear and the reality like clashing the whole time and people creating their own aspects of it as well, right?
I agree. Like I have a young daughter, she's 12 and she loves to draw. For me as a parent, I'm obviously conflicted. Should I encourage this, that she keeps learning how to draw, or should I encourage her to learn how to do AI? And then she has these automated tools. And I'm very honest. I prefer her to draw. I prefer her to get the hand skills, but not only the hand skills, the visual perception of the results I get from the AI, are they good or bad? And that's a skill that you're not going to be able to get
By using AI.
Exactly. You still have to have that human factor behind it. It's like, yes, but this is wrong, or the perspective is wrong, or the contrast is wrong, or the negative space is wrong. And then that is something that you have to learn. It's not something that AI can give you. Yes, they can give you some image, but is that image good? That evaluation process still needs to be somehow a human behind the steering wheel to discuss yes or no.
I used to work in, and I'm still part of their advisory board, but I used to work in an amazing marketing agency called Creative Agency, called PlaySense, and well, shout out for them. And they were using AI in a very, very smart way, because a lot of times they want to show an idea to a client, but they don't have time to create a whole concept from scratch, because also that client didn't pay you yet. You're still selling the idea, right? And then a lot of times the easiest way to sell the idea is to go in AI and to create some images that are not going to be used in the final option at all, but it will help the client visualize what you want to do. So instead of just trying to explain with text, you can actually explain with images. And I think that's a lot of what AI can do. And I know, like, I'm not going to name the company. I don't want to put people in trouble. But I know AAA studios that are using AI to create backgrounds and then painting on top, because it saves them a ton of time and allow their artists to focus on the interesting parts instead of spending a whole week just painting like vast areas of the same image.
Yeah, this is a bit of the discussion we had a bit ago, and I completely agree with you. Like, the conceptual work that you have to do, the sparring partner for a creative, the exploration of different visual styles that you can use, all of that work can be much more augmented because you can actually have the time to explore. And this is what I mean about create your team more effective and more efficient, not because you can reduce the number of people around you. No, it's more about you can use the same people to explore much deeper concepts that you could before, because now they have the resources to do so. This is the way I'm seeing things evolving. And there's going to be adjustments in the industry, but this is what I'm seeing the industry adopting to use as a motto.
Nice. And to finish, what advice would you give? Like, let's finish in a positive tone. You there that are were scared before, like How do we finish this?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say that look at the evolution, a bit of the history of games. Really, honestly, look at it and see the amazing evolution that we had. Because AI is embedded, technology in evolution in technology is embedded in there since the beginning. From the cartridges that you have from the early PlayStations and console games that you had and Nintendo's to the current settings and the current platforms that we have, the technology that we have for 3D, the evolution that you had in hardware, it's always embedded. So don't be afraid of the new technologies. Embrace them, learn them, because they're going to be useful for your future. That's for me my advice. Your skills as a human is going to still be very valuable, because AI is still not there. It's still not going to be able to make the decision left or right. It can give you what's the good, what is good right, what's good left, what's good center, but you still have to decide. So you as a human still have to do a lot of work in terms of be the central piece to be the conscious side of things and make the correct decisions.
I couldn't say better. And I would add on from my side is, if you want to have an influence on the ethical use of AI, then you have to be a user. Like being from outside, like pointing and saying, look, no, this is bad. It's not going to make any difference. If you want to have a participation on the ethical use of AI and what are the consequences of that, you have to know what it is so you can actually make it. Informed decisions and informed comments. So what Carlos said is like spot on. Learn about it so then you can actually have an influence on, we as human beings are the ones that are going to define how this tool is going to be used in the future, right? Like we use the computers, we use the technology, the other people can create, but without demand, There is nothing there, right? So, Carlos, thank you super much. That was super fun. And I say super
thank
a lot,
Kathy,
don't
always.
I?
It's really, really great. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, anytime. And we have to do in the future one with you and Thomas, because Thomas also talk about AI in games. And I think it would be quite interesting to have a discussion, the three of us.
Great. Up for it.
Thank you. And everybody, I see you next week. Thank you very much. Bye. And then it went like...